You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Don't miss out on your chance to listen to four-time Super Bowl champ Charlie Weiss on the only podcast solely devoted to everyone's favorite position in football, the quarterback. Listen for free now by subscribing wherever you get podcasts or by going to celebrityqb.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest in sports news, fantasy analysis, and opinions. Don't forget the hot takes. Can't have a sports show without hot takes these days. What about hot cakes, though? I want some hot cakes. Now here's your host, ready to jump into the thick of things, Dwayne Callender.
Good evening and welcome to the show. We just wrapped up Game 3 of the NBA Finals, so another victory for the Warriors and a lot of questions to be asked for the Cavaliers as if to how they're going to win a game given the start they got off to and the fact they couldn't close it out. I got my dad on the line here, so we're just going to get right down to it. All right, Pop. Again, the Warriors win this game, but you know the story of the game is the fact that you had both Curry and Klay Thompson completely neutralized in this game from beyond the arc and anywhere else on the floor because they both weren't hitting shots and were passing up opportunities the entire game. And Cleveland still cannot find a way to close the deal. I had my reservations about Cleveland actually winning a game this series. But to me, the best chance I thought they were going to have this series was Game 3. Now, it turned out to be Game 1 after all. But, you know, tonight I thought Cleveland had their best start in the finals coming out of that game with the crowd behind them. You know, they build up a nice big lead in the first quarter, and then they let Kevin Durant go off in the first quarter, and you look up at the score and you're like, oh, wait a second, the Cavs are only up by one. This ain't a good look.
Yeah, well, that's what I kept saying. After that first game, I thought that the series was over because I don't think you're going to get that monster game out of LeBron again because he's already realized that, hey, what? I mean, he probably went home and say, hey, what the hell am I going to do again? What am I going to do, go another ham? You know? So it's like he can see the writing on the wall because if he could play that good and still end up losing a game like that, just snatched out of from right under him. You know, it's demoralizing. You know, you could see it in his face. You could hear it in his voice after the press conference. I think he's gonna play his game. He's gonna play a good game. He's gonna get points. But I don't think he's gonna come up with a game that could beat Golden State. Because bad enough that he may not have come up with it at all, you know. Because if he's hitting on all cylinders and Golden State is hitting on all cylinders, he's still going to lose. And he knows that. But I figure he can make a series out of it. And the best way to do is to put the fear of LeBron into Golden State's heart by having a game like that first game. If they had won that first game, you probably see a 49-50-point game out of him maybe in game three, you know. But after that first game, I really lost that game. I know it was all over. There's no way LeBron is going to be able to muster that kind of thing. And he's tired, too.
Yeah, that's...
He, people get not like he's 23. He's not 23.
That was my issue with the series, was the fact that LeBron only has, given how much effort he had to put into the Celtics series, because that was the one bugaboo about that series, was because they couldn't close out the Celtics in six games and it had to go to a seventh game, LeBron emptied the chamber again. And I felt, you know, for this finals, he had basically one, at best, two monster games left in him, because his body can't hold up the way it used to. 2 days isn't enough recovery time for him, and even 3 days still isn't enough to get the job done. So, you know, at the end of the day, LeBron actually needs additional scoring to actually get over the hump. And the problem with this game is that, you know, you look at the box score, and at the end of the day, Kevin Love still is only at 20 points. Now, granted, it took him fewer shots to get to 20 this go around, but 20 points isn't going to cut it. And the next highest scorer was Rodney Hood, who hadn't even played the series. That's the ridiculous part about it. It's like, you know, Tyronn Lue is so desperate, he finally turned to Rodney Hood, which I thought should have been from the jump, because Rodney Hood athletically can match up with Golden State far better than the likes of George Hill. But, you know, my thing is, athletically, you know, George Hill can't keep up with Golden State. He struggles. So, again, George Hill back to being 5 points in 27 minutes. It's not going to cut it. J.R. Smith, 13 points on 5 of 14 shooting. So, 3 of 10 from beyond the arc. It's just too many guys that aren't able to shoot from beyond the arc, missing opportunities. And at this point, you know, you got to throw things up against the wall and see what sticks. And I'm saying, at this point, you got to start playing Jordan Clarkson with Rodney Hood and seeing if you get anything. Because to me, I think the Cavs need a more athletic backcourt to at least give LeBron some space. To me, LeBron doesn't have space. LeBron is literally driving from the top of the key and beyond the three-point arc just to get it to the basket. And, you know, it's draining him, because he got 33 points, but it took 28 shots. That is an incredibly inefficient game from LeBron James. Normally, because he can usually cut that number down to 22 and get to 33 because he's going to the free throw line. He only had 7 free throw attempts, mainly because he's trying to do everything else. That's why he was passing the ball up so much in the first half, because he knew he didn't have much in the tank, so he was trying to get these other guys involved. And it worked for about 5 minutes in the first quarter, and then it went to a hell in the handbasket the rest of the first half.
Yeah, well, look, let me tell you something. In order for them to put any kind of fear into Golden State, okay, 20 points is what you need from people like J.R. Smith and them. Love has got to be up in the 30s. It's got to be 30 and up. You understand? In order for them to really, for LeBron to operate, you know, where he can take a break and catch his wind, and you have a guy in his 30s playing 48 minutes straight every night, and you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the thing. LeBron played 47 out of 48 minutes tonight.
I'm telling you, it's not going to work, and he knows it. He knows it. And he put it all in there. Now, I thought after the Celtics series, I thought that game one would have been the throwaway game for them. Instead, he kind of crossed me up, and I guess he crossed Golden State up by coming out and just
oh yeah, at them Golden State. Yeah, Golden State was completely flat-footed game one.
They weren't ready. Yeah. They weren't ready for him. They weren't ready for him in that first game, and I think that's why he did it. And he came out in that first game, he figured, look, I'm going to take this first game, And I'm going to have them a little worried because then they're going to know that they have to win the second game, you know. So I'm going to put a little fear in them. And then to lose it the way he lost it, look, this is a human being you're dealing with. You're old, you're tired, you know, and you put disappointment in there, and there's no way he's going to come up with those kind of games again. I'm telling you, you're not seeing another one of those games. Look, you might get that game four coming up. You might get 20 points out of LeBron, and he may just check out in that game and look to get up at Cleveland.
Yeah, no, and that's the real danger, because it's only a one-day turnaround. The game's Friday. The game is Friday. I thought they might have made it a Saturday night affair. The game's Friday. I'm not sure what condition you're going to get LeBron in after playing 47 out of 48 minutes. And people could say, he's only in his 30s. Yeah, but LeBron playing in his 30s is a lot different than some of past NBA players, because LeBron is always in the finals. Like, LeBron has about 3+ years of playoff seasons added to his body. So, legitimately, LeBron is in his late 30s in terms of basketball age.
Let me tell you something. Out of all the teams that big-time teams that challenge for the finals, this Cleveland team is about the worst assembly you have of people. I mean, you know, everybody talks about Jordan. You know, I was there in Jordan times, you know. But where's the Scottie Pippen? Where's the Rodman? Where's the Horace Grant on this thing? Yeah, everybody talks about you know, Jordan teams. Then you're like, Jordan just pull guys off the street and played with them.
Well, part of the thing is, like, everyone keeps, like, poo-pooing, like, the first three-peat teams, saying it was all Jordan. I was like, Jordan had some really good teammates the first go-around, too.
Wait. The first three-peat teams was all Jordan? What else guys like Grant and them?
Well, that's the thing. We've gotten to a point where we do revisionist history as if MJ did all this by himself, and then he left, and then he came back, and then he had an all-star team, and then got even better. It's like the revisionist history about the Bulls is pretty ridiculous at this point.
Look, let me tell you something. All you got to remember is those games when Jordan was scoring 50 points, he couldn't get by the Celtics or the Pistons.
Yeah, he kept losing those series.
Couldn't get by them. Okay? So I don't want to hear those kind of shit. He couldn't get by those teams. And that was when he was at his youngest and flying and scoring all those kind of points. They didn't win shit. So I don't want to hear people telling me about that. You know, this is the worst assembly any superstar have around them as a big team. I don't want to sound a drum, this great fan of LeBron James. You know, I just have a good memory.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of this just ends up being revisionist history. Because my thing is that, you know, everyone uses MJ to knock down Magic and Bird, but then they also knock down Kareem, Wilt. I mean, there's a long line of guys you can make cases for being the greatest ever.
Hey, Bird had McHale, he had Parrish, he had Carr, he had Bill Walton, he had Dennis Johnson. Like, people forget that. You understand? So it's not like he didn't have a good team around him. Magic had Kareem, Woody, Cooper, Byron Scott, Thompson, McAdoo at one time. So, you know, I don't want people to be telling me these kind of nonsense. There's no team that all those teams. You tell me who's the other Hall of Famer on this Cleveland team. All those teams, the Jordan teams, the Magic teams, the Bird teams, the Isaiah teams, all of them have Hall of Famers on them. All of them, besides the star. All of those teams have one or two Hall of Famers on them. go back and check. You go back and check. Show me the Hall of Famer on this team.
You're telling me no one's erecting a statue for Booby Gibson?
Yeah, J.R. Smith is gonna go to the Hall of Fame. He's gonna be on the short list. Yeah, I mean, you know, people just like to, like, you know, the biggest problem we have right now is that people have, even though they have all the technology that they could check everything, they have the shortest memories.
Oh yeah, no, fans are extremely fickle. Fickle tonight. I look at it just like it's one of those things where I feel as though people just like kind of make up their own narrative, and that's just it.
I'm telling you, when I was younger and we would argue about stuff, guys had to be searching their memory and calling this one and asking, do you remember when so and so and so. No, you don't have to do that. You just grab your phone and you ask Siri, whatever, and you get the exact answer. And still, people have a way of, like, they just forget what went on, you know, a couple of years ago. You know, there's no way you can class this Cleveland team with any of those teams. And they would lose the losing team. You know, yeah, they would lose to some of the losing teams. So, you know, when they're talking about, you know, about teams, you know, and LeBron, all this Cleveland team has on it is LeBron. That's it. They have LeBron. You know, and a bunch of guys who just comes in there. But like I say, for them to even be competitive with this Golden State team, you gotta be getting 30s from Love and 20s from people like J.R. Smith and them, and you can't get that. A good night is when J.R. Smith gave 15. That's a good night for him, you know, because this is a guy who would end the night with 10 points, and he's supposed to be one of your scoring options.
The only
thing could surprise me is if they don't get swept. That's the only surprise I could get. I said that in the first night.
Yeah, so basically, one of the things that the NBA did tonight, Callie, I know you weren't following, but you know, I was taking a look through it because the NBA decided to have the referees comment live tweeting during the game, which is never a good idea. Maybe people will call me an old fogey too, but I mean, tweeting as the game's going on with like hot takes and opinions on, oh, this was a terrible call. It's like you're going to get it from both sides. So I don't know why the NBA decided to open up the referees to this criticism, but you know, the joke of it all is the fact that immediately, within the first 5 minutes, Draymond Green and Tristan Thompson get double technicals for trash-talking each other all the way through. My thing is, I would have just let it play on. But because you called out to the fact that, oh, we're going to take control of this game, we're not going to have loud outbursts, you've set the bar to a point where any loud outbursts or trash-talking is automatically a technical. And then instead, they set off the double technicals and then allowed Draymond Green to go off the entire night yelling and screaming about every single play that went on against him. It was incessant, and no technical happened.
You know, that's when you get these brilliant ideas in the boardroom, and without really thinking, you come out and just try to implement them on the court. You know. But look, I'm not a big Draymond Green fan because I think he gets away with a lot of stuff. You know, I think he overdoes it sometimes. You know, because the amount of the amount of stuff that he got into already, it's amazing that he doesn't get ejected more often. Because he's on the wrong side of a lot of these stuff. A lot of those things he's on the wrong side of. You know, and he pushes the envelope a lot. You know, he pushes it a lot.
Well, it's not even a lot. It's literally he creates his own envelope because the reactions, it just goes so far over the top that, you know, Van Gundy points it out accurately. It's just like there's a whole set of different rule book for Draymond Green versus everyone else because he can carry on. And everyone else is just like, okay, you're getting over the line here. Here's a technical. It's just like Draymond's just like having demonstrations on the court. And, you know, nothing happens.
Yeah, that's what I tell you. He gets away with a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of times I'm watching him and I'm like, you know, look, I never give him the benefit of the doubt because he always looks like he's doing something. You know, I don't trust him. He's a guy that, like I said, he makes up his own envelope. He don't only push it, he brings it to the court. He brings his own envelope. You know? So it's something else with him. You know. But man, what can I tell you?
Yeah. So
anyway.
Yeah, so I mean basically, you know, we'll wrap this one up just because I honestly can't say much else about this game other than Kevin Durant was on fire. Yeah, I mean, he got into a rhythm in that first quarter and never let it go. I mean, 15-23, 6-9 from three-point range. I mean, he took some deep three-pointers, too. It wasn't as though he was getting some cheapies. He was legitimately feeling himself and stalked his territory. So, I mean, outside of that, no one else on Golden State played well, and they still won the game. That's the troubling sign for Cleveland is the fact that one guy can go off for 40, and even though no one else is playing well in Golden State, they're still moving the ball around enough that everyone else is in double figures. The Cavs have four guys in double figures the entire night. And the Warriors literally had seven guys, and two more guys who are at 8 points. I mean, that's the problem. That's it in a nutshell. You can't just have trade baskets with the Warriors because, you know, even when a guy like JaVale McGee is getting easy looks at the basket, you know, it's not going to work. And then, I mean, Andre Iguodala injured himself again tonight and still put up 8 points in 22 minutes. Wow. It's like he's putting up dunks and layups in the middle of the court when he can't jump. It's like Dre is like, you could tell he's hobbling, and he's still getting the easy looks at the basket. That's the problem with Cleveland right now. Because to me, Tristan Thompson has to be more of a presence in the middle, and he's not.
Here's the terrible thing about Cleveland. Here's the most telling thing about Cleveland. Is that when's the last time somebody either equal the score of LeBron or outscore LeBron on Cleveland?
What? Outscore LeBron? What?
I said, okay, so that's you know, because as good as Curry is,
are you talking about post Kyrie?
You know, because as good as Golden State is, you know, Curry gets outscored some nights. Thompson gets a score that night. It's Durant. It's LeBron or nothing. It's like, that's where you know there's a problem. You know, that's when you know there's a problem. That's not good. That's not good. And I am not a betting guy, but I would lose money that LeBron has already had that truck backed up by the house. And he's getting out of Cleveland because there's nothing there. There's nothing. He's going to waste. If he stays there, he's going to waste his next few years on seasons like this one where, you know, yeah, he's going to get them into the finals, but And let me tell you something. Next year, Kyrie and the other forward that got injured. They're on that Boston team. They're not beating that Boston team.
Oh, Hayward? Yeah, no. That Boston team, there's no way LeBron can beat them without getting additional people in Cleveland. The only way LeBron can stay in Cleveland is if he can convince Chris Paul to leave Houston to come to the Cavs. That's about it. But if I'm LeBron, why would I have Chris Paul leave when I got a better situation down in Houston, regardless, with the role players?
That's what I'm not going to say, because that's still not going to be enough.
Because even if Kyrie
had stayed, I still think they wouldn't have enough to be beating Golden State.
Yeah. They don't have a third option. Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, even with the Rockets losing people this coming off season, it's still going to be a better squad than the Cavaliers without LeBron. That's the problem.
Let's see what tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll catch you later, Callie.
Okay. All right. Take it easy.
Hey, Throwdown Nation. Are you at the bottom of your fantasy league wondering what is going on with your quarterback? Well, I think I've got a new show that may just fit the bill for you. The show is called Celebrity QB, featuring four-time Super Bowl champion coach Charlie Weiss. Unlike other football shows, you'll get the inside scoop on all things quarterbacks to get your burning questions answered, such as, is this the year Tom Brady finally looks his age? Can Aaron Rodgers actually play a full season on one healthy leg? And can Dak Prescott actually lead the Cowboys to a Super Bowl in spite of Jerry Jones? Coach Weiss and co-host Steve Stroud have got you covered on all things quarterbacks. Listen now on Apple Podcasts or any major media platform. Celebrity QB, everyone's favorite position. Yeah, so that does it for Game 3 of the NBA Finals. I'm going to talk about the NHL in a bit, just because we had another victory by the Washington Capitals, based off of what they're playing at a level right now. And again, I talked about this with Ovechkin, what he's been able to do overall with his game this postseason. I keep waiting for the moment where, you know, the wheels are going to come off, but it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, it's one win away from the Stanley Cup. So I think we're getting ready to see the Caps lift the cup, just because they got the best player, and he's on top of his game, and he's getting everyone else involved. They're playing with a ton of confidence. Vegas has rapidly lost confidence because of the fact that, you know, Vegas plays a style very similar to the Columbus Blue Jackets, where they do a heavy forecheck, and the Caps played this exact same system in the first round against Columbus. That's why, you know, I knew home ice advantage would have some impact, but I just felt with the style of play, you know, the Caps are used to this style. So, you know, because they already played it hard, it wasn't anything else that they had to adjust a whole lot amount. It was just a matter of hoping, making some saves. And that save in Game 2 changed the momentum because, you know, the Caps players started believing in Holtby again. And that was always the big bugaboo, was like what Braden Holtby was going to show up in the Stanley Cup Finals. So, you know, I look at this and I kind of look at it from the standpoint of, you know, the Caps have played a great postseason. They've taken care of every hurdle that they need to do. They just got to win one more game and, you know, it's a wrap. But, you know, my credit to them, because I picked them to win the series. I thought it was going to be a longer series. So we're going to see what Vegas does tomorrow night back home. But I think Vegas is going to just come out with everything they can blitz. So if Vegas can't get a lead by a goal or two in that first period, it can get ugly, because I think Vegas is going to expend as much energy as humanly possible in that first period to get out to a big lead and reignite the crowd and get that energy back. Because, again, they've lost so much confidence, and the Caps are just gaining momentum, that this is turning into the same snowball effect that happened to Columbus in that opening round series. So we'll see how it goes with that. Over on baseball news, just a couple of updates that happened. Yeah, Madison Bumgarner come back from his finger fracture for the San Francisco Giants. He pitched well in the loss to Arizona. So obviously, he's going to be one of those guys to keep an eye out on. In terms of targets, I would look at in terms of trade value for fantasy purposes, though. There are a couple of guys I would take a look at strongly. If you're in a position where you're needing power, you're needing pitching, these are a couple of guys I would take a hard look at and see what you can do in terms of trade value. First up, we have Paul Goldschmidt in terms of fantasy players to target. Goldschmidt has been absolutely dreadful this year, uncharacteristically so, because he had been the mark of consistency in terms of first base. So in terms of the season thus far, I know people have been making a big stink about the humidor effect. To me, that's not the issue with Goldschmidt. The issue's been the fact that he has been catching up with the fastball because pitchers have been targeting higher fastballs with him, and he's just been popping them up. He's been swinging under them. Looks as though he's getting back into a little bit of better form over the past month, and also the past week alone. He's actually hit for .435 average. He's got 10 hits, 23 at-bats. Slugging's back over 1,200. You know, everyone is going to be making plays for Paul Goldschmidt. I would say if you're a Paul Goldschmidt owner and you have any thoughts about contending for a title, I'd say you got to hold on to him. Unless you're sorely in need of pitching help because of injuries, there's no reason why I would trade Paul Goldschmidt. But I do see the fact that, you know, if you got an owner that is thinking that what Goldschmidt's doing is just a flash in the pan and he's just going to have a down year, yeah, make the offer. I would just say that overall, you know, the April he had was weak just in terms of his usual numbers. And then, you know, it was May where it was just like befuddling how poorly he was hitting. I mean, the 144 average was just brutal. So I think he's on the rebound. But if I'm an Paul Goldschmidt owner, I wouldn't move him. But obviously, I would say he is at the top of the list for trade targets. So if you can package him in a 3-for-1 type of deal with an owner and try to get them convinced to move him, by all means, go for that. But I'd hold on to him if I actually own Goldschmidt. Another guy I would look at in terms of trade targets would be Anthony Rendon of the Nationals at that third base. Career numbers are a little bit down this year, just because he's still only batting .239 with only 5 homers and 13 RBIs. Overall, his walk rate is still up. So, you know, it's been consistent with what he's done in the past. So he's basically walking at about 11% versus 50, a strikeout rate of 15%. So his OBP is still in the .330 range. So my opinion, this is a classic case of the balls batted in place that is being lower than it's been in years past. And so you've got a BABIP where it's coming in at .274, where his typical average is .309. So basically, you're talking about a difference of 30 points here. You know, when you translate that, you know, you're expecting him rest of the season to be about a .275 hitter, all things considered, with BABIP, just because, you know, you could have a great defensive play, and that is what lowers your overall batting average. But by and large, when you have a .309 BABIP, you know, you're typically going to be a .285 hitter. So my stance is maybe you can put in the cheap offer in on Rendon and try to buy him low. But my expectation is within the next 2 to 3 weeks, Rendon's going to start turning around again and the window's going to close. So to me, this is one of those cases where you kind of have to make a move now for getting a guy like Rendon, who can actually be a really big boost for you as you near the playoff stretch. The third candidate that I would say take a good long hard look at is Cody Bellinger, because the story is out that he's going through the typical sophomore slump. I look at it as saying, you know, he has a funky batting stance. I didn't really believe that he was a true 270 hitter. I think he's probably closer to being a 250 hitter, but he's not a guy who's gonna be dropping all the way down to because he was in the low 220s in the 230 range. He's a better hitter than that, and the ISO power is way down last year. So I look at this and saying that, you know, overall he struggled in the postseason just as teams started throwing him high fastballs and he hasn't adjusted yet. I still think that there's a good chance for Bellinger to rebound. I just think the narrative of saying it's a sophomore slump is, you know, it's just kind of tired. I don't want to say lazy, because yes, teams have adjusted to rookie players in their second year and they've had some struggles, but he's talented enough as a young hitter that he can make those adjustments. So to me, he looks like a prime candidate for a uptick in second half production. So I would take a strong look at Bellinger just to see where he is at the moment. So that would be my next guess there. And finally, in terms of pitchers that I would take a look at in terms of trade candidates, I'd be looking at guys who were just coming off of DL, because you've got owners who were patiently waiting on them, but if they start showing any signs of weakness, so you had Cueto on track for coming back, and you have Bumgarner, who just pitched the other day. I take a look at those guys, and I'd also take a look at Robbie Ray for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Ray is coming off of the lat strain. If he looks as though he's not striking out folks in his first 2 to 3 starts, I would say try to put together a package for him, just because he has elite level strikeout ability. The only guy who comes close to Ray, in my opinion, in terms of overall strikeouts per 9 innings, would be Scherzer and Noah Syndergaard. So it's a very short list of guys who could be that dominant K through 9. So if for any reason he looks a little bit sluggish coming out of the gate, I would say that's something someone to definitely target in the second half of the year. He should be coming back to the main roster within the next week and a half. So definitely someone to keep your eyes on. And of course, for the San Francisco Giants, like I said, Cueto's coming back. Bumgarner just pitched this week, so any signs of weakness from those guys, I would pounce on. Bumgarner had an excellent first start back, and he just didn't get any run support. But if he struggles in the next outing, you might get an owner with a little bit of doubt in his head, and maybe you can take advantage of that. So those are guys that I would say are definite trade targets you should be keeping in mind as you go into the second half of the season. Now, a couple other guys that I would say sell high on. These are two guys where they've far and away outperformed any expectation you could have reasonably had for them, but it's time to start indicating in terms of it's too good to be true. I can't see it being sustaining for full length of the season. So while they may not cool off completely, it's hard to even say that they could be even close to this. So right now, Scooter Gennett is probably, like, for all intents and purposes, the best second baseman in Major League Baseball in terms of fantasy production. He's topped Altuve. I can't believe I just said that, but he's in terms of all the fantasy stats, Scooter Gennett has trounced the Altuve, far and away outperformed Dozier, guys like Whit Merrifield. I mean, you know, if you're looking at numbers since the beginning of May, Gennett is batting just under 400 with 10 home runs and 27 RBIs, and the BABIP is over 425. So, you know, it's a case where he's playing way over his head. The fact of the matter is, though, like, his best BABIP ever was last year, which was 389, and that is far and away higher than his career mark of 333. So, you know, the natural thought progression is that he is going to have a massive regression in the second half of the year, just because it's almost impossible to keep up that amount of power. I would say, you know, I wouldn't give away the farm for Gannett just to offload him, but I would say if someone is looking at moving a high-priced asset, and you know, like I said, if you've got a case where someone's looking to offload Goldschmidt and you can get another player along with Goldschmidt, I would absolutely do that deal. Like I said, I don't believe that Gannett can remotely keep up this pace. So I would say if you can get a first-round talent or a couple of second-round picks for the likes of Scooter Gannett, you do it, because you know, you can make a case for him saying that he's coming into form, this, that, and the other. You know, yes, regression is a very real aspect, but you know, whenever you're making a trade, you're always trying to upsell your own guy. So my opinion is Gannett is way overdue for regression. So it's time to sell now before that regression even starts showing signs, because he's got about another good 2 to 3 weeks in him, but then the wall's going to hit hard. So I would say now's the time to start exploring those trade opportunities with Gannett, because you don't know exactly when he's going to hit the wall, but it's almost inevitable at this point. The next guy I would say definitely consider moving would be Matt Kemp of the Dodgers. You know, Matt Kemp was basically an afterthought. I mean, the Dodgers were legitimately contemplating waiving him, and you know, after being traded back to LA, you know, they didn't really have a spot for him, but then they had a couple of injuries in the outfield, so Kemp stayed on the roster, and then since then has just torn it up. I mean, since the middle of May, he's batting .400, and he's got at least 4 or 5 home runs. But he's currently leading the NL in batting average at .344, which is, even at Matt Kemp's peak with the Dodgers, and this is going back 7 years ago, he wasn't hitting at this clip. You know, the issue being is that at Kemp's age, he's 33, not 23. You know, he's always been a guy who's had issues with picking up little nicks and injuries. You know, part of it they attributed to, and he's even acknowledged it, him not keeping himself in the best of shape, partying too much. You know, that seems to change from his mindset, just because of he took it personally, according to reports about when people were saying that he's kind of thrown away his career by not taking his physical fitness as seriously as he should have. But I just look at it as, like, yes, he's doing all the right things. It's just impossible to keep up with the amount of production he's had without expecting some type of regression. But my thing of it is that you can definitely get some value with Kemp, just because he's a recognizable name. So people have seen him put together MVP caliber season. So the name recognition with some folks is enough to trigger it, where they're not going to be looking at facts as his age or the fact that he's never produced at this level before in terms of batting average. So my advice on Matt Kemp would be sell now before he gets an injury, because I just think it's inevitable. You know, it's almost the same parallel I would use with guys like Nelson Cruz and JD Martinez. Like, they're due to get hurt. The only thing is, you know, JD Martinez is just hitting at a clip right now where it's hard to make the case to make a move on him just yet. Although I do know that there's probably a DL stint or two left in JD Martinez's future in the second half of the year. I would say he's a guy to keep an eye out for. That's like a cautious hold, but I would still say by the end of the month, if he hasn't shown any signs of getting injured, you're probably still in the position where you need to move a guy like JD Martinez or Nelson Cruz, because once the summer months hit, they're more than likely going to have to do a DL stint or two, even if it's for 10 days, each time, but they're going to need to get a little bit of a blow once the July and August hit. So those are some names to consider for trades, and hopefully you guys got some value out of it. As always, you can shoot me an email or hit me up on Twitter for Fantasy Throwdown. So that's going to do it for the show today. Well, I say today because we're already past midnight for the NBA game, but thanks for listening, and have a good one, folks. Although I highly doubt that we're going to get much in a way of a game Friday night with Golden State and Cleveland, but you know, I'll be here to recap it as always. So take care and have a good one.
It's the most talked about position in all of sports, the quarterback. And now there's a show solely dedicated to the most sought after role on the field, Celebrity QB, featuring four-time Super Bowl champion coach Charlie Weiss. Unlike other football shows, you'll get the inside scoop on all things quarterbacks. Like, is this the year Tom Brady finally looks his age? Will dating Danica Patrick distract Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, he's dating Danica Patrick, Charlie. We're interested in that, you know?
Well, I mean, Tommy's got Giselle. I'll take Giselle, okay?
Is Dak Prescott good enough to win a Super Bowl for the Cowboys? Which rookie quarterback has the best shot of making a positive impact in 2018?
How about intellectually, Charlie, as far as what they ask the quarterbacks to do now?
The game has changed, but the pressure that's put on quarterbacks, and it always been put on quarterbacks, is tremendous.
Join Charlie Weiss and co-host Steve Strout on an all-new podcast from Lasting Media, exclusively about quarterbacks. Subscribe now at Apple iTunes or wherever you listen to great podcasts. Celebrity QB, everyone's favorite position.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.